her bag. She was a secretary or assistant, it seemed. And as such, no one paid any attention at all to her.
That's her, right? Said Sanchia.
That's her. But if she gets past 50 or so yards, I can't keep up with her. So stay close or tag her with Berenice's scribing.
Yeah. Yeah. Sanchia exited the building after the woman and kept her in eyesight, pacing across the Hippotas building's front steps and down into the streets.
It was dreadfully hot and foggy and rainy. Not the best conditions to be following someone. Most of the streets were too empty for Sanchia to feel comfortable making a play for the woman. But when they approached a busy carriage fairway ahead, she saw her chance. The woman waited along with a small crowd of Campo denizens as a train of carriages thundered past. Sanchia sidled up, got close, and in a smooth, quick motion that resembled waving away a fly, she dropped the tailing scribing in the woman's bag. The carriage train tapered off. The woman, perhaps sensing something, turned to look around. But Sanchia was already gone. Sanchia reached into her pocket, grabbed Berenice's twinned plate, and snapped it in half, her signal that the tag had taken place. Then she pulled out her half of the trailing scribing, a small wooden dowel with a wire tied to it, and a scribed button tied to the end of the wire. The wire was pointing straight at the woman. It's on, said Sanchia. Sanchia was following the woman to the south gates when she saw the carriage, unmarked, stationed about 20 feet away from the gates, with a single figure in the front. She walked up to it, keeping an eye as the woman passed through the gates to the commons. Berenice nodded at her from the carriage's front window. The girl's face was unpainted, but she was, rather frustratingly, still quite pretty.
That's her, Sanchia said. Let's go.
We're not taking this gate, said Berenice. We'll go to the east gate and loop back around.
What? Why the hell would we do that? We don't want to lose her.
The rig you put on her should give us a mile range to work with, said Berenice. But more to the point, we're assuming that girl's employer is the one who paid for all those flying assassins, yes?
Well, if she's as valuable as we think she is, they'll likely pay to give her a few guardian angels, who will be quite interested in anyone who comes out the gates directly after her.
Good point, said Clef. And as a heads up, kid, your friend is loaded up something fierce.
What do you mean, loaded up?
I mean, she's like a walking goodie bag of rigs. You don't hear them all?
I've been on the campos too long. It's tough for me to hear anything specific anymore unless it's powerful. She looked Berenice over. She really is?
Yeah. She's come prepared, but for what, I don't know. Stay on your guard.
Hurry up and get in, said Berenice. Change clothes and stop arguing.
Sanchia did as she asked, climbing into the back. There was a set of clothes more suitable to the commons laid there. Sighing, she hated changing clothes, Sanchia crouched down and started putting them on. The carriage took off, speeding down the Campo wall to the east gate.
Hold on, said Berenice, spinning the wheel and sending it hurtling through the gates.
Then she took a hard right and sped back toward the south gates.
Could you scrumming slow down? Shouted Sanchia,
who'd tumbled over in the back, her head stuck in a light coat.
No, said Berenice.
She held up the tailing wire, which, rather alarmingly, had gone slack. Then abruptly, the button shot up and pointed off into the commons.
There, she said. We're in range.
She brought the carriage skidding to a halt, grabbed a pack from the floor, and jumped out.
Come on, grab the pack of clothes. We'll go on foot. A carriage would stand out here.
Sanchia was tangled in a set of breeches.
Give me a damn second!
She struggled into the clothes, buttoned them up, and jumped out of the carriage. The two of them started off into the commons.
Keep your tailing wire in your breast pocket, Berenice said quietly. You can feel it tug in the right direction without having to look at it.
She eyed the streets and the windows. I assume you can spot someone who means us ill?
Yeah. Look for someone big and ugly with a knife, said Sanchia.
They closed in on their mark and found the woman seated in a taverna at the edge of Old Ditch. She'd bought a mug of cane wine, but she wasn't drinking from it. Sanchia peered at the streets around the taverna.
It's a handoff. Someone else will take it the rest of the way.
What makes you so sure?
Well, I'm not totally sure, said Sanchia.
Then she spotted him, a man standing on the corner, dressed as a commoner.
He kept glancing at the woman with the bag with an anxious, wary stare. But that guy looks like a likely candidate, yeah?
The man looked around at the street for a while before he finally moved, stalking into the taverna and up to the bar. He ordered, and as he waited, the woman stood and left without a word, leaving the bag behind. When the man got his drink, he walked over to her table, sat, drank his wine in no fewer than 5 gulps, staring anxiously out at the street, picked up the bag, and left. He turned east, walking quickly with the bag over his shoulder. Sanchia felt the tailing wire twitching in her pocket as he moved. Yet, as he walked, Sanchia noticed that more people were walking with him, trickling after the man one by one from doorways and alleys. They were all large, and though they were dressed like commoners, there was an undeniable heft and professionalism to them.
We'll keep our distance, said Berenice quietly.
Yeah, said Sanchia.
As much of it as we can.
The group of men kept going east, through Old Ditch, then through Foundry Side, until they came to the Michiel Campo walls.
The Michiels? Said Berenice, surprised.
Really? I didn't think they had the guts. They're more artisans, focusing on heat and light and glass and...
And they're not going in, said Sanchia. They're still moving, so cut the speculation. They kept following, lagging behind a bit to give the men some breathing room. Sanchia felt the tailing wire in her pocket twitch as the men moved. And now that they were away from the Campos, she could hear the multitude of mutterings emanating from Berenice's person, many of them quite powerful by the sound of it. Sanchia glanced sideways at her and cleared her throat.
So, what's your relationship to Orso?
A relationship? Said Berenice. You want to talk about that now?
A natural conversation would be a good cover.
I suppose that's so. I'm his fab.
Sanchia had no idea what that was. So, does that mean you and he are,
Berenice looked at her, disgusted.
What? No, God! Why does everyone always think a fab is a sex thing when I say it? Plenty of men are fabs, and no one ever gets that impression about them.
She sighed. Fab is short for fabricator.
Still not following you.
She sighed again, deeper.
You know how sigils rely on definitions? Disks of thousands and thousands of other sigils that define what that one new sigil means?
Vaguely.
A fabricator is the person who makes those definitions. Every elite scriver has one, if not several. It's like architects and builders. The architect dreams up these vast, grand plans, but they still need an engineer to actually make the damned thing.
Sounds complicated. How'd you get into that line of work?
I've a head for remembering things. My father used to make money off me. I'd memorize all the hundreds and thousands of Scivoli moves. The game with the checked board and the beads on strings. And he'd take me around the city and bet against my opponents. Scivoli is a favorite among fabricators, and it became something of a competition to see which one could beat me. But since they all played among themselves, they all basically had the same moves.
so it was pretty easy to memorize their games as I went along. So I won.
How'd that get you to working for Orso?
Because the Hippotas found out his fabricator got beat by a 17-year-old girl, said Berenice. And he called me in, looked at me, then he fired his old fabricator and hired me on the spot.
Sanchia whistled. I guess you traded up pretty quick. That's lucky.
It was lucky twice over, she said. Not only was I plucked out at random to become a scriver, but women are rarely admitted to scribing academies these days. It's become a more masculine pursuit after the wars.
What happened to your old man?
He was less lucky. He kept coming around to the office and demanding more money. Then the Hippotas sent some people to talk to him, and he never came back.
Her words had a forced lightness to them, as if describing a half-remembered dream.
Whenever I go into the commons, I wonder if I'll see him. I never do.
The men began walking northeast. Then they turned a corner, and Berenice sucked in a breath.
Oh, shit.
What's wrong? Asked Sanchia.
I think I know where they're going, she said.
And where's that?
Then she saw it.
5 blocks down the muddy fairway from them was a campo gate, lit with flickering torches. Set in the dark stone arch above the gate was a familiar logotipo. The hammer and the chisel crossed before the stone. The men appeared to be heading straight for it.
The Candianos, sighed Berenice.
She watched as the men trickled through the gates. The Candiano house guards nodded to them.
He knew, she said quietly. That's why he talked to her, because he'd already suspected.
What? Said Sanchia. What are you talking about?
Never mind, said Berenice.
You said you can get us in there?
Yeah, come on.
Sanchia trotted down the Candiano campo wall until she found a small steel altar door.
This is a security door, said Berenice. What the guards use when they need to infiltrate the commons. You really got a key to here?
Sanchia shushed her. Clef, can you break this thing without blowing it off its hinges?
Yeah, shouldn't be hard. Listen to it.
A swell of whispering, and the voice emerged.
Strong and firm and hard and true. I await the key of light and crystal to shine stars within my depths.
What the hell is it saying? Asked Sanchia.
It's kind of clever, said Clef. The lock is waiting for a key to go into its housing and shine light in a few places. Then it'll unlock and open.
How are you going to make light?
I'm not going to make light. I'm just going to trick the door into thinking it's had light shown in all the right places. Or maybe I'll make the door forget which places need light, and instead make it think the whole front of the door is that specific place. Yeah, that should be easy.
Whatever. And it won't set off the alarms if we go through without sachets?
I can make this entry forget what human bodies feel like when they pass through it, so it won't know to perform a check. But it'll only last for a few seconds.
Fine, just do it fast. She looked at Berenice. Keep watch. We can't get caught doing this. What are you going to do?
Use a stolen key, said Sanchia. She approached the door, and making sure Clef wasn't visible and that Berenice's back was turned, she stuck him into the lock. She'd expected the exchange from before. The bellowing voice, the dozens of questions. But it didn't come. Rather, the exchange happened so much faster. It was more like when Clef had picked the mechanical locks, popping the Miranda brass in the blink of an eye. Only she felt a burst of information exchanged between Clef and the door.
He really is getting stronger.
The thought filled her with dread. She pulled the door open. Come on, she said to Berenice. Hurry!
Inside, they have to change top clothes again, this time into Candiano colors, the black and the emerald. As they dressed, Sanchia glanced sideways at Berenice and caught a glimpse of a smooth, pale shoulder, dappled with freckles and tawny, moist hair clinging to her long neck. Sanchia looked away. No, she thought. Stop. Not today. Berenice pulled on a coat. Your contacts are good, she said. If they were able to get a security key. Sanchia thought quickly for an excuse. Something's up with the Candiano Campo, she said. They're mixing up all their security procedures. They even changed over all their sachets. Change makes for a lot of opportunities. Then she had an idea, because this was all true. You don't think that has anything to do with whatever is going on? Berenice thought about it, her cool gray eyes fixed on the mountain of the Candianos in the distance. Possibly, she said. Once they were changed, they started off into the Candiano Campo. And as they walked, Sanchia realized something. She looked at all the houses and streets and shops, these done in a darker shade of moss clay than the rest of the campos she'd seen. And she found none of them familiar. I've never worked here before, she said. What? Said Berenice. I've done jobs on the other campos before, she said, filching this or that, but never the Candiano Campo. You wouldn't have. You know the company Candiano almost fell apart about 10 years ago, right? No, I've barely lived here 3 years, and I've mostly been trying to survive, not sharing work gossip. Tribuno Candiano was like a god in this city, said Berenice. He was probably the greatest scriver of our era. But then they found out he'd been doctoring the financials, spending fortunes on archaeological digs and supposedly hierophantic artifacts. Then the company came crashing down. They lost a huge amount of talent after that, said Berenice, including the Hippotas. You can just call him Orso, you know. Thank you, I'm well aware of that. Anyway, nearly everything got bought up by the Ziani family, but not many people stuck around to make sure the ship would still float. That tremendous exodus was a great boon to the other merchant houses, but Company Candiano has never really recovered. Sanchia looked around. There were a lot fewer lights here. No floating lanterns and almost no scribed carriages. The only impressive thing in sight was the mountain of the Candianos, which loomed in the distance like a vast whale parting the seas. Oh, shit. Berenice watched the group of men skulking through the streets of the campo. They seemed to be following the outer wall. Why aren't they going deeper in? If this is as secretive as it's supposed to be, why aren't they headed straight for the mountain? You either hide secrets close to your heart, said Sanchia, or out in the hinterlands. It must be somewhere close, though. Otherwise, they'd have grabbed a carriage, yes? They followed the men along the campo wall. Evening was coming on now, and the mist thickened as the sun withdrew. The pale lights of the Candiano Campo were a brittle white, not at all the pleasant rosy or yellow hues of the other campos. They looked spectral and strange in the fog. Then a constellation of lights emerged ahead, a tall, sprawling construct that Sanchia had trouble making out. Is that a... Yes, said Berenice quietly. It's a foundry. Finally, the man came to the foundry gates. Sanchia could read the stone sign above. Cataneo Foundry. Yet unlike most of the foundries she'd encountered in her life, this one did not seem to be operating. There was no stream of smoke, no quiet roar of equipment, no chatter or cries from the yards beyond. They watched as the men entered through the gates. The guards out front were heavily armored and heavily armed, yet they also seemed to be the only people around. The Cataneo Foundry, said Berenice. I thought that one was closed when the house went bankrupt. What in hell is going on?
Sanchia spied a tall townhouse next to the foundry walls. I'll get a better look.
You'll get a... Wait! Said Berenice.
Sanchia trotted over, took off her gloves, and slowly scaled the side of the townhouse. As she climbed, Sanchia could hear Berenice fretting down below, muttering,
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Sanchia nimbly pulled herself up onto the slate roof. From here, she could see the whole of the foundry yards, and they were empty. Just yards and yards of blank mud or stone. It was a queer sight. Yet she could spy the men in the distance, filing into the foundry main facilities ahead, a huge, fortress-like structure of dark stone, with tiny windows, a copper roof, and dozens of smokestacks, though only one seemed to be operating, a small one on the west side, which sighed a narrow thread of gray smoke.
So the question is, thought Sanchia, what are they making?
She watched the walls and yards of the foundry and saw that although the facility appeared empty, it was not deserted. There were a handful of men standing along the walls or the ramparts of the foundry. And though it was hard to make out from this distance, she could see the gleam of scribed armor on their shoulders.
This place gives me the creeps, said Clef.
Me too, said Sanchia.
She took stock of the defenses, counting the guards, their positions, and the doors and gates throughout the facility. Then she looked at the main building, and she saw a handful of windows had light in them. There, in the corner rooms, on the third floor, on the northwestern side.
But I think we need to get in there.
Clef sighed.
I was worried you were going to say that.
Sanchia carefully climbed back down to the street level, where Berenice stood fuming.
Next time, at least consider asking me before you do that.
It's not shut down, said Sanchia.
What?
The foundry's not shut down. There's smoke or steam coming from some of the stacks, so it's still forging something. Do you have any idea what?
Not at all. But the Apatis might. We can go back and consult with him, and then perhaps we can come up with a plan to...
No, said Sanchia. There are 12 guards patrolling the foundry walls tonight. If this bastard listens to the captured sounds from the workshop and gets spooked, there could be 50 tomorrow. Or they could move out altogether.
So what?
Wait. Berenice stared at her.
You surely aren't proposing what I think you are. Are you?
We've caught him unawares, said Sanchia. We take advantage of the opportunity or we lose it.
You want to break into a foundry? Right now? We don't even know if anything's going on in there.
There is. There are lights on the third floor in the northwest corner.
Berenice narrowed her eyes. The third floor? Then the administrative offices, possibly?
So, you know something about foundries. Do you know how to get into a foundry?
Well, certainly. But there are countless sachets required, said Berenice. But worse... There are only a few ways in, and even a skeleton crew can watch them all, unless you can...
Then she trailed off, staring into the distance.
Unless you can what?
Berenice glowered like she'd just had a thought she dearly didn't want to have.
Does this have anything to do with all the rigs you're carrying with you? Asked Sanchia.
Her mouth fell open.
How did you know about those?
And a sheepish look crossed her face.
Oh, right. You can, hear them. I was going to say, unless you can make your own door somewhere.
And can you do that?
She squirmed. Well, it's all, very experimental. And it will depend on finding the right bit of stone wall.
Chapter 19.
Berenice led Sanchia down to the canal, running along the foundry. There they came upon a clutch of huge tunnels and pipes sticking out of the canal walls. "Intake?" muttered Berenice as they reviewed them. "Outtake, intake, 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 and outtake."
"These all look like iron," said Sanchia, "not stone wall."
"Yes, thank you, that's clear." She pointed at one, a huge gaping iron pipe with a thick grate across its mouth. "That's it. That's the one, the metallurgical outtake pipe."
"What are we going to do about the grate?"
"Go through it," said Berenice. She walked to the closest tunnel and tried to climb onto its top, but despite her height, she rather pathetically slid back down the side.
Little help?"
Sanchia shook her head and gave her a boost. "I guess fabs and scrivers don't get out much," she muttered. Together, they crawled across the tunnel tops to the big outtake pipe. Berenice sat and took out a case of what appeared to be a dozen small, scribed components, and many small plates covered with complicated sigils. She selected one component, a slim metal wand whose rounded, bulbous tip looked like molten glass, and looked it over.
"What's that?" asked Sanchia. "I'd made it to be a small spotlight, but we obviously need something a bit more now."
She reviewed her components, selected a rounded handle with a bronze knob on the side, and slid the small end of the wand inside until there was a click. Then she took a long, thin plate and slotted it into the side of the handle.
"There, a heating element. That should do."
"Do what?"
"Help me down. I'm going to get the grate out of the way."
Sanchia lowered Berenice down until the girl delicately balanced on the lip of the pipe. Then she lifted the wand to one of the big rivets holding up the grate, adjusted the knob on the side, and...
"Crap," said Clef. "Shut your eyes, kid."
"Why?"
The tip of the wand flared bright hot, like a shooting star had plummeted down to land in the scummy pipe. Sanchia cringed and looked away, eyes watering. There was a loud, furious hissing sound. She looked back when it stopped, and saw the rivet was now a glowing blob of smoking, molten metal. Berenice coughed and waved her hand in front of her face.
"I'll do the sides and the tops and leave one rivet on the bottom. Then you pull me back up, and I'll attach an anchor to the top, like the one the captain used to weigh you down. This should pry the grate open, and we can slip inside."
"Shit," said Sanchia. "Why did you bring all this?"
Berenice touched the wand to another rivet. "I got shot at the other night. Rather a lot. I came prepared to prevent such a thing from happening again. A lot of components that can do a lot of different things, when combined the right way, that is." The wand flared bright. When Berenice was finished, Sanchia hauled her back up. Berenice took out the anchor, a small bronze ball that was covered in shiny brass sigils, with a shiny latch on its side, and chained it to the top of the grate. She slid the latch aside, revealing a wooden button, and touched it. Suddenly, the grate groaned and creaked, until it slowly fell open, like a drawbridge.
"Inside," said Berenice. "Quick."
They dropped down into the mouth of the pipe and ran into the darkness. Sanchia was about to touch a hand to the wall to see, but there was a click, and Berenice's wand glowed bright again. Yet she'd apparently removed whatever component made it capable of burning through iron, and it now only gave out light. "Keep your eyes out for any stone," she said. She adjusted the light, turning down the brightness.
"Where the hell are we again?"
"We're in the metallurgical outtake tunnel of the foundry. Processing so much metal, iron, brass, bronze, lead, it takes a lot of water, which gets tainted and rendered unusable after the forging's done. So they dump it all out into the canals. It's a big pipe that runs through a lot of the foundry, and if we see any brick, I should be able to get you in."
"How?"
"I'll tell you once we find it," They kept walking and walking, until finally Sanchia saw it. There, on the side, she pointed. The iron walls of the pipe stopped short about 10 feet ahead. And from there on out, the walls were stone and brick, like an old sewer. Berenice reviewed the stone wall and glanced back at the mouth of the tunnel.
This could work. I think we're next to the storage bays, but I'm not sure. And I would really prefer to be sure.
Why?
Well, we could be next to the water reservoirs, which means the tunnel would flood and we'd drown.
Crap. Hold on. Sanchia slid off a glove, placed her hand to the bricks, and shut her eyes. The wall was thick, at least 2 to 3 feet. She kept letting it pour into her mind, telling her what it felt, or at least what was on the other side. She opened her eyes.
It's just wall, she said. Nothing on the other side.
Is it thick?
Yeah, at least 2 feet.
Berenice grimaced.
Well, maybe it will still work then.
Maybe what will work?
She didn't answer.
She reached into her pocket and pulled out what looked like 4 small bronze spheres with sharp steel screws on their ends. She examined the wall, sucked her teeth, and started screwing the bronze spheres into the wall in the shape of a square, with 1 ball at each corner.
"Can you please just tell me what this is?" asked Sanchia impatiently.
"You know about construction scrivings, right?" said Berenice, adjusting the bronze spheres.
"Yeah, they glue bricks together to make them think they're all one thing instead of separate things."
"Yes, but lots of foundries use the same kind of stone or something close to it, which makes it a lot easier to twin."
"Twin with what?" asked Sanchia.
"With a section of stone wall that's back in my office," said Berenice, standing up. "One that has a big hole in the middle."
Sanchia stared at the wall, then at Berenice.
"What? Really?"
"Yes," said Berenice.
She scrunched her nose, reviewing her handiwork.
"If it works, it should convince this section of wall that it's the same as the one in my office. That'd then weaken all the Candiano construction scrivings in a circle, and basically carve a hole for you. But I've really never tested this in the field before, especially not on a wall this thick. And if it doesn't work, frankly, I don't have a damned clue what will happen if it goes wrong."
She glanced at Sanchia. "Still feeling experimental?"
"I've done dumber shit in the past few days."
Berenice took a breath and twisted the tops of all 4 brass spheres, 1 after another. Then she stepped back and slowly moved away, like she was preparing to run. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the color of the brick changed ever so slightly, growing just a tiny bit darker. Then came a creaking sound. The brick shuddered and rippled. And then, suddenly, the wall fractured in the middle in a perfect circle, like someone had carved it with a saw.
"It works," said Berenice. "It works!"
"Great," said Sanchia. "Now how the hell do we get that big plug of stone out of the way?"
"Oh, right."
Berenice pulled out yet another trinket from her pockets. This one appeared to be just a small iron handle with a button on the side. "Just a construction scribing. It'll stick to the plug center." She placed the handle in the center of the stone plug, confirmed it was stuck, and gave a mighty heave. Nothing happened. She tugged again, her face turning pink, and stopped gasping.
"Well," she said, "I didn't quite anticipate this."
"Here," said Sanchia. She knelt, gripped the handle, placed 1 foot against the wall, and pulled. Slowly, with a low, grinding noise, the short stone column slid a few inches out of the wall. Sanchia took a breath and pulled again, and it finally fell to the tunnel floor with a plunk, leaving about a 2-foot-wide hole in the wall.
"Good," said Berenice, miffed. "Well done. Can you fit?"
"Keep your voice
Down. Yeah, I can fit.
She crouched and peered into the hole. The room on the other side was dark.
Do you know what that is over there? She whispered.
Berenice turned up her scribed light and stuck it through the hole. They glimpsed a wide room with a steel walkway running around the edges and a huge heap of twisted metals in the center.
It's the waste bin, essentially. All the cast-off bits of metals go here to be melted down and reused.
But I'll really be inside the foundry, yes?
Yes.
She shook her head. God damn, I can't believe we just broke into a foundry just with some random shit in your pockets.
I'll take that as a compliment. But we're not there yet. This is the basement. The administrative offices are on the third floor. If you want to find out what's going on here, that's the place to look.
Any advice for how to get up there?
No. I've no idea what doors will be locked or what passages will be blocked or guarded. You'll be on your own. I assume you don't want me to come with you?
Two housebreakers makes for a quick trip to the loop, said Sanchia. It'd be better if you kept a lookout.
Fine with me. I can go back to the streets outside, and if I see something, I'll try to think of some way to warn you.
Sanchia slipped her feet into the hole. You wouldn't happen to have any more useful rigs, would you?
I do, but they are destructive, and boundaries are delicate. Meaning if you cut through or break the wrong thing, you would die, and probably take a lot of people with you.
Great. I sure as shit hope we get something out of this, said Sanchia, sliding forward.
Me too, said Berenice. Good luck.
Then she trotted back down the tunnel.
Sanchia slipped through the hole in the wall, stood up, and tried to get her bearings.
It was pitch black in there now, and she was reluctant to use up her talents just to get around a room. Scribed lock on the door on your left, said Clef. Up the steps. I can sense it. All the pipes and walls are crawling with sigils. The entire place is a device that makes other devices... Wow.
And it's a headache to be inside it, said Sanchia, stumbling over to the door.
She fumbled for the lock, stuffed Clef inside, and opened it. She was relieved to see weak light filtering through the hallway on the other side. Using Clef, Sanchia unlocked door after door as she penetrated the depths of the foundry. She was astounded at the sheer density of the thing. All tiny passageways that led to huge, complicated processing bays, full of giant, loom-like devices or cranes that perched over tables or lathes like spiders, weaving cocoons about their prey. The heat within the foundry was immense, but there was a constant wind in every hall and passage, carrying the hot air out to, well, somewhere, she assumed. It was like being trapped in the innards of some kind of giant, mindless creature. Most of it was deserted, which made sense, since only a portion of it was being used now. But then...
Three guards up ahead, said Clef. Heavily armed.
Sanchia looked ahead. The passageway ended in a closed wooden door. Presumably there was some kind of hallway being guarded beyond it.
What floor are we on? She asked. Still on the ground floor, I think.
She took off a glove and felt the wall, then the ceiling. The foundry was so alive with scrivings that this felt like walking under a powerful waterfall. The sudden pressure almost knocked her over. But she held on, walking along the walls, her bare fingers trailing over the stone and the metal, until she felt a long, narrow, vertical cavity just ahead.
A hatch. A shaft.
She took her hand away, shook herself, and withdrew back down the hallway until she found a small door. A sign on the front read, Lexicon Maintenance Access. The lock on the front was deeply forbidding. She took Clef out and stuck him in the keyhole. There was a burst of information, and Clef batted the lock's defenses away like it was a wall of straw.
That seemed easy,
she said, opening the door. The shaft within was narrow and ran perfectly straight up and down, with ladder bars on the opposite side. It was dark within, so she couldn't see what was above or below.
It was, but...
But what? There's something down there. Yeah, the lexicon. She reached out and started climbing up.
Right, but it feels... familiar.
How do you mean?
I don't know. It's like if you smell the perfume of someone you hadn't smelled in a long, long time. It's weird. I'm not sure why.
Sanchia climbed until she came to the third floor. She turned until she was facing the door and blindly found the handle. Anyone out there?
Oh, hell yeah. This place is crawling with armed men. Go to the fourth floor. It's deserted.
She did as he asked, came to the fourth floor, and opened the hatch. This floor, unlike the others, had windows. Slashes of moonlight lay scattered across the blank stone floor. It looked like this area was mostly storage, lots of boxes, but not much else. She glanced out a nearby window, got her bearings, and started off toward the administrative offices.
I'm guessing there aren't any other unguarded passageways down to the next floor.
None. Great. How secure are the windows?
Well, they're basically scribed to be unbreakable, so no one, you know, tries to shoot bolts into the foundry. But it looks like they do swing open at the tops to let out heat or smoke.
There was a pause.
Before you ask, they do open wide enough to let you in or out. Probably.
She smiled. Excellent. Berenice huddled in a doorway beyond the foundry walls, squinting at the windows through a spyglass. She found it hard to focus. Despite her occasional dabbling in Campo intrigue, she was not at all accustomed to such high-stakes trickery. She certainly hadn't expected anyone to climb any buildings tonight, let alone break into a damned foundry. Still, it seemed Sanchia was right. Something was going on. There, on the third floor. She could make out a handful of people inside, but they seemed to be slowly gravitating toward the administrative offices.
That's less than optimal, she thought. How will Sanchia manage to get it?
She stopped. Was that a window opening? There, on the dark fourth floor? She watched, open-mouthed, as a small figure in black slipped out of the fourth-floor window and clung to the corner of the building.
Oh, my God, said Berenice.
Sanchia hung tight to the corner of the foundry, her fingers digging into the narrow gaps in the stones. She'd held on to trickier places in her time, but not many. She slipped down inch by inch to the next floor. She found a dark window, which meant no one would be inside, hopefully. She wedged her boots into the stone, then reached out with her stiletto and inserted its tip into the gap at the top of the closed window. She gently pushed the handle of the blade until the window started opening. Once she'd gotten it open a crack, she pulled back until it was wide open. Then she climbed up and lowered herself down into the gap.
Clef said, "That was
amazing." She was hanging by the inside lip of the window. She suddenly felt grateful about them being unbreakable, and she lowered herself until she stood on a desk.
Amazingly stupid, maybe. Watch out now. There are guards almost all around you, in the big area outside the door.
She slipped off the desk and got her bearings. This seemed to be a large, empty meeting room, one that hadn't been used in some time. She walked over to the door opposite the window and squinted through the keyhole. There was some kind of a wide, open area beyond, with four armored Candiano guards standing around, looking bored and tired.
"Oof," she said quietly.
She stepped back and looked around. There were two other doors on the left and right, presumably leading to adjoining offices. She walked over to the door on the right and tried the handle. It was unlocked.
She silently opened it and looked in. Another office, empty and dark. She closed it and went to the final door. Yet, as she approached, she stopped. "Was that a moan I just heard?" she said.
"Yeah," said Clef. "And it sure sounded to me like the fun kind of moan."
Sanchia got close to the door, knelt, and pressed a hand to the floor. She let the floor pour into her mind, a difficult thing since there were so many scrivings wearing her stamina thin. Yet soon she felt it. A bare foot, just one, the ball of the foot pressed into the floor. And it was pumping up and down.
"Yep," said Clef. "Yep, yep, what I thought."
Sanchia peered through the keyhole. This office was somewhat grand. There were scribed lanterns inside, a long desk covered with old wrinkled papers, and a set of wooden boxes. There was also a bed in the far corner, and there were two people on the bed, a man and a woman. And they were quite naked and obviously coupling, the man keeping one foot on the floor and his other knee on the bed. Due to her condition, Sanchia did not know a great deal about sex, but she got the impression that this was not particularly good sex. The woman was quite young, about her own age, and terribly pretty. And though her face was fixed in an expression of pleasure, there was something anxious and artificial about it, like she was dreading the displeasure of the man more than she was enjoying the experience. And though the man had his back turned to her, his skinny, pale back, there was a mechanical and determined quality to his thrusting, like he'd set his mind to do a job and was hell-bent on doing it. Sanchia watched them, wondering what to do now. She didn't think she could sneak out and snatch the papers off the desk. The girl kept looking around, anxious and yet bored, like she'd prefer to look at anything else than what was being done to her. Then there was a knock from somewhere within the office. There must be another door there, she guessed, also leading to the open area beyond.
"Just a minute,"
shouted the man, somewhat angrily. He doubled the pace of his thrusting. The girl cringed. Another knock.
"Sir?"
said a muffled voice.
"Mr. Ziani? It's done."
The man continued his endeavors.
"You said to notify you immediately,"
said the voice. The man stopped and bowed his head in frustration. The girl watched him warily. "So, that's Tomas Ziani?" said Sanchia. "The guy who bought out all of Company Candiano?"
"I guess,"
said Clef.
"Just a second,"
shouted the man, louder. Then he turned and dug around on the floor for his clothes. Sanchia's eyes shot wide, though it wasn't particularly bright in the room. She knew that face. The curls, the scraggly beard, the narrow cheeks. It was her client. The man who'd turned on the Imperiet that night in the Greens and caused the blackouts. And the man who'd almost certainly had Sark killed. She stared at him, trying not to move.
"Holy hell," said Clef. That's the guy, isn't it?"
"Yeah, that's the guy," she thought. The sight of him filled her with a raging mix of terror, fury, and confusion. She briefly considered leaping in and planting her stiletto in his gut. That seemed an appropriate way for him to die, naked and confused and sexually frustrated. But then she remembered the guards mere feet away from them, and thought better of it.
"So this Ziani guy is who's behind all this?"
asked Clef. "Shut up and let's listen, Clef." Ziani pulled on a pair of hose. Then he sighed and barked,
"Come in!"
A door opened somewhere in the office, and bright light spilled in. The nude girl in the bed pulled the sheets up to cover herself, glaring at them sullenly.
"Ignore her," snapped Ziani, "and come in."
A man entered the room and shut the door behind him. He appeared to be a clerk of some sorts, dressed in Candiano colors,
and he carried a small wooden box with him. I assume if it was a success, said Ziani, sitting at the desk, you'd be looking much happier.
Did you expect a success, sir?
Said the clerk, surprised. Ziani impatiently waved a hand.
Just bring it over.
The clerk approached and held out the box. Ziani took it, glaring at him, and opened it. Sanchia almost gasped. Inside the box was another Imperiat, but this one appeared to be made of bronze, not the gleaming gold she'd seen before.
What in hell? Said Clef.
Ziani examined it.
It's shit, he said. It's shit is what it is. What happened?
The same thing that's always happened, sir, said the clerk.
He was obviously uncomfortable having this conversation with a nude girl in the room.
We forged the device to your specifications. Then we attempted the exchange and, well, nothing happened. The device remained as you see it now.
Ziani sighed and pawed through the notes on the desk. He pulled out one browned, wrinkled sheet of parchment and examined it.
Perhaps,
said the clerk. Then he stopped.
Perhaps, said Ziani.
Perhaps, sir, since Tribuno has been of such great help on the other devices, perhaps you could also discuss his notes with him regarding this subject?
Ziani tossed the papers back onto the desk. Sanchia watched the page fall.
Tribuno Candiano's notes? On what?
Tribuno is still mad as a tick on a burning hare's ass, Ziani said. And he's only been somewhat useful. About once a month, we find something scrawled in his cell that, yes, is useful, like the strings for the gravity plates. But it's not like we can control that. And he's written shit all about the Hierophants.
There was a silence. Both the girl and the clerk watched Ziani anxiously, wondering what he'd make them do next.
The problem is with the shell itself, said Ziani, looking at the bronze Imperiat. Not the ritual. We're following the ritual's instructions exactly. So there must be some sigil we're missing. Some component of the original we either don't have or aren't using right.
Do you think we need to re-examine the other artifacts, sir?
Absolutely not. It took a lot of work to move the trove out of the mountain. I wouldn't want to lead Ignacio or any other of these slippery bastards to it just because I wanted to check notes.
He tapped the bronze Imperiat before him.
We're doing something wrong. Something on these is being made improperly.
So, what would you suggest we do, sir?
Experiment.
Ziani stood and started getting dressed.
I want 100 of the shells made before morning and sent to the mountain, he said. Enough for us to experiment on and adjust, comparing it with the original.
The clerk stared at him.
100? Before morning? But... Sir, the Cataneo's lexicon is at a reduced state right now. To produce that many, we'd have to spin it up quickly.
So?
So, the lexicon will spike. It will definitely cause nausea for all of us, I expect.
Ziani was still.
Do you think I'm stupid?
He asked. The room grew tense. The girl shrank down below the sheets.
Certainly not, sir,
said the clerk.
Because it feels like you might, said Ziani.
He turned to look at him.
Just because I'm not a scriver. Just because I don't have as many certifications as you. Because of that, you think I don't know these things?
Sir, I just...
It's a risk, said Ziani. And an acceptable one. Do it. I'll supervise the fabrication.
He pointed at the girl.
You stay there. It's far too long since I waxed an agreeable cunny, and I won't have this dull bit of business delay that either.
He buttoned up his shirt, his face twisted in faint disdain.
I certainly won't deign to go pawing around Estelle's musty skirts for a bit of push.
And Sir?
Yes, snapped Ziani.
What should we do with the corpse?
The same thing we've done with all the others? I mean, why should I know? We have people for that, don't we?
Ziani and the clerk left the office and shut the door behind them. The girl slowly shut her eyes, sighing half in relief, half in dismay. Sanchia silently slid out her bamboo pipe and loaded it with a dart.
I can't tell if this girl's night is about to get better or worse, said Clef.
Better, I think, said Sanchia.
Sanchia waited for a few minutes, making sure they were really gone. Then she silently opened the door a crack, trained the pipe on the girl's neck, and blew. The girl made a soft, ah, as the dart struck her neck. She tensed, drunkenly slapped at her neck, fell back, and was still. Sanchia slipped into the room and went to the other office door. She peered through the keyhole and confirmed no one was approaching. Then she looked at the papers and boxes on the desk. She picked up the thing Ziani had called the shell, his term for the Bronze Imperiate, which apparently did not work. She found he was right. It was little more than a curiosity, a dull, dead hunk of metal. Though it bore many strange sigils, it was not a true scribed device.
So, that's what they're making here, said Clef.
He sounded genuinely frightened.
They're making more Imperiates. Or trying to.
Yeah.
100 of them. 100 Imperiates! God, can you scrumming imagine?
She tried to and shivered.
That guy could wipe out all the other merchant houses, said Clef. He could destroy every army and every fleet in the Durazzo.
I need to focus, Clef. What else is here? She looked at the papers on the desk and saw most were yellow with age and written in a strange, spidery hand, like the hand of someone who was either old, infirm, or both. She looked at the top of one paper. Theories on the intent of hierophantic tools. The notes of Tribuno Candiano, she thought. The greatest scriver of our age. There were a lot of them, and she understood few at a glance. But some of the papers were different. They appeared to be wax rubbings of stone engravings or tables or bas-reliefs. But what they depicted was confusing. Each one showed an altar, always an altar, positioned at the center of each paper. Floating above the altar was the image of a prone, sexless human body. Perhaps it was an artistic rendition of someone lying on the altar's surface. Floating above the human body was always an oversized sword or blade, several times the size of the altar or the person. Written inside the blade were any number of complicated sigils, which varied from engraving to engraving. But all of them had these three things in common, the body, the altar, and the blade. There was something gruesomely clinical to it all. They did not depict some religious rite, it felt. Instead, they seemed like instructions, she thought. But instructions for what?
Maybe Orso knows.
Maybe. She scooped up all the papers, folded them, and stuffed them into her pockets. We got what we came here for, I think. Let's get the hell out of... Clef moaned, a sound suggesting both pain and epiphany.
Oh, son? Do you feel that?
Feel what?
There's someone here. There's a mind down there.
Huh? Down where?
Down in the ground. It's waking. Thinking, pulling. It's waking up, San,
he said dreamily. The lexicon, you mean?
I hadn't realized, you see. The lexicon is a mind. A clever one. One whose arguments are so convincing that all of reality has to listen. Do you know what that feels like?
Then her head lit up with agony. It was like the world was dissolving, like a meteor had struck the earth, like the walls had been turned to ash and cinder. She was still in the office, still standing next to that sleeping girl. But there was a hot coal in her brain, burning it away.